Welcome to another edition of Dink Talk. This is a special one for me. This is one of my closest friends in the business and maybe closest friends in life, actually. We're going to interview Spanky today. Spanky is famous for betting from the top down, which means he anticipates moves in the market and makes bets accordingly. And he's a pretty high volume bettor, mostly for arbitrage and middling, but for other things as well. But we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what makes Spanky tick and where did he come from? What were his roots and how did he become a gambler? And we both have a love of wrestling, so we're going to be talking some wrestling a little later in the podcast. Spanky, are you there?
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, Dink. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on. It's an honor to have you.
Honor to be here.
So let me ask you a couple of general questions about the business. What motivates you? Is it the money or is it the fact that you're good at what you do and you're driven to be the best?
So initially it's always, you know, it was always about the money. And you know, I money is always a primary factor in what I'm doing, but I'm at a point right now, you know, luckily, thank God that money is no longer the factor, that, you know, I just want to be the best I can be. And, you know, if I still can make money doing what I do, and it's not, you know, it's not as difficult. You know, I kind of overcame a lot of the big hurdles to kind of get to where I'm at, then, you know, until it becomes very difficult or it becomes so hard that it's not worth it, that's when I'll probably hang it up. But I got such a great team, and these guys, you know, for them, I want them, their earn to increase and for them to be well off, you know. But if I lost part of my team, like if Chinese Mike told me tomorrow that he would hang it up, or if Luke told me he would hang it up and he's no longer interested, I'd probably just retire, to be honest.
What would you do if you retired? What would your next day be?
Not sure. You know, I would, I never thought of that. You know, but I'm kind of like semi-retired now, honestly. The day-to-day betting is handled by Luke, Chinese Mike, and the day-to-day accounting is kind of, Mike does everything. You know, Manny does a lot of the programming and stuff, and I'm still doing a lot of programming. I'm doing a lot of tech back-end, and I'm kind of doing a lot of, you know, PR-type things if I'm doing the Twitter thing or if I'm talking to new big betting partners. Like, there's probably 30-40% of our betting partners that I've never even spoken to. You know, the smaller guys, Mike kind of handles them. But anybody that's big or anybody that's significant, you know, I try to get on the phone with them at least once or twice and you know, periodically and stuff. So that's pretty much what I'm doing now. I'm no longer involved in the day-to-day. So I can't, you know, it won't be too much of an adjustment to just fully be out of the business.
But will you go to the beach? Will you read a book? Will you watch, get back into sports? Go on a wrestling tour? What would you do?
Well, you know, I'm pretty active in all my kids' lives, you know, so I would just continue doing what, you know, helping my kids out, you know, with their studying habits and their homework and, you know, and, you know, I just spend more time with my wife, spend time with, you know, maybe start to play basketball again. I used to play basketball all the time, you know, 15 years ago. And, you know, probably go to more wrestling shows, probably, you know, just tour the world more. And, you know, I just enjoy life. I think that, you know, I think the secret is to work to live, you know, not to live to work. So I would just relax and just enjoy. I'm kind of like in the middle of I don't want to say a midlife crisis, but I'm kind of like right now, I'm kind of trying to reclaim my youth a little bit. So I'm like looking at like old memorabilia, like toy. I went to a toy convention recently just to try to get like old stuff that I used to play with when I was a kid. Transformers, Voltron, you know, the LJN wrestling figures and all these things that kind of made me happy to try to like, you know, like put a smile on my face when I used to play with these things. And, you know, so I would just do a little bit more of that and, you know, just enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Ever think of just giving your business to Mike and Luke and going, I've had enough, I've made enough, I'm happy, I don't want to do this anymore?
Yeah, you know, I still think I'm a very vital part of it. You know, the technology is big. You know, we all, me, Mike, and Luke, us three, and with Manny too. But me, Mike, and Luke, you know, we're like the primary legs. Like, without one of us, the business can't really operate at this point. So, like, you know, Mike handles all the figures. Luke does, you know, he handles the decisions on what to bet, where to bet, how to bet. And I'm the one doing the tech in the back end, making sure, you know, all the Autobots are betting and making sure that everything. And then me, Mike, pretty much also are doing all the PR stuff and talking to the betting partners. Luke kind of stays out of that because, you know, the betting is such a full-time thing. So it's, you know, it's we're all contributing so much that if one guy drops out, it really, really hurt us. You know, I still think I'm a vital part, and I still enjoy it. That's another thing. You know, you enjoy it, and you know, it's crazy because we've been using the same principles, the same fundamentals for all this time, and we're still successful. You know, there's still code that I have that's being used just to analyze price discrepancies, and you know, some of this code I just look, you know, just look, there's code that hasn't been touched since 2001, 2002. You know, so it's pretty amazing, in my opinion, at least, you know, for a code that's 19, 20 years old to still be applicable and to still be used and to still be profitable, you know, in 2021. So it's just, you know, if you do build it right the first time and it stands the test of time for that long, it's great. You know, it works. You know, this top-down thing works. And until it doesn't work, then, you know, we're going to still chug, you know, still chug away.
I did a podcast with Rob Pizzola, and he said his mover caused you the bane of his existence. Do you have a reaction to that? Does that make you happy and smile?
No, I don't smile at other people's downfall or anything like that. That's not, you know, it's, you know, I think it's a funny thing, but no, I don't listen. I'm, you know, a lot of people, if they don't work with me, you know, Billy Walters hated, you know, didn't like what I did, you know, to his plays. And he did the same thing with you. You know what I mean? Where he didn't like when you had one of his plays. I remember you telling me that story. It's an open market. So it's a free market. And you know, and the people that do work with us or that do give us a heads up on what they're going to do, then I'm their best friend in the world. You know what I mean? But if you're going to run it, work independently with, you know, you know, I'm out there. So I'm, you know, that's been called all the bullet of China shop. You know, I have a big footprint in the business. So it's, I know what's moving. I know why it's moving. I know who's betting it. I know a lot of things. And that's how I earn. So, you know, I'm happy. Like, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, hey, listen, Spank, just want to let you know, I'm betting this game -5. You know, if you could just lay off, sure, no problem. I'm you know, I'm never going to, if somebody tells me things, I would never, you know, sabotage or anything like that. But if I don't know what somebody's doing or if I don't know, my guys are just betting and we're betting. And if we think a line's going to go from 5 to 7, we're going to also lay that 5. So people, you know, oh man, Spank, you stole the play. There's no stealing. It's a free market. And, but if somebody, you know, we work with a lot of different groups where information is shared and, you know, we're very pleasant to deal with and we're very, you know, and it's a handshake deal and it's an honor system where, you know, you don't want to step on people's toes, especially on purpose. I would never do that, you know, but inadvertently we're all after the same numbers. So when that does happen, it's never on purpose. And I remember I talked to Rob's partner and I told him, listen, my apologies. You know, I was, you know, it was a cutthroat business back then. It still is to this day, you know, to some extent, but I never intentionally try to hurt somebody's plays or try to do something. That's not my style. I'm just trying to earn. I'm trying to, you know, beat the closing line just like everybody else. So it's never, ever intentional to anybody out there, whether it was Billy Walters, whether it was this guy, that guy. No, I'm also trying to get the right number, you know, and that's it. It's just, you know, and there's just, unfortunately, there's just not, you know, there used to be a lot to go around, but it's just getting harder and harder. You know, there's not much to go around anymore with this, you know, per head era. So it's a constant struggle.
I don't think he meant it that you're doing something wrong. I think he just meant it that you're doing something really well, and it takes him out of the game a little bit.
Yeah, I don't listen, but I don't, you know, it's not like he was a big fan of mine. You understand, people, you know, like just like Billy wasn't, these guys, you know, I'm doing
but,
something
but I don't
wrong,
think people who know you think you're cheating them. I think you,
of course,
they just know that you're beating them into the numbers that they want.
Of course, and that takes money out, that takes bread off their table, that takes money out of their pocket. So they're not gonna say, hey, good job, Spank. No, nobody's gonna do that. They're not gonna like me, but that's okay. I'm accepted that. I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to be popular. I'm trying to earn. I'm trying to, you know, do the best for my team and then my betting partners, and we're trying to make money. So, you know, I never ever, but I would never intentionally, you know, I'm, you know me personally, obviously. I'm not. I would never hurt anybody directly like that. That's not me.
I don't think I'd be mad at somebody better than me. I would strive to just get better. That's the way I would look at it.
Yeah, and they do. You know, a lot of people would try to throw fakes. Billy was the master of that. And he would catch me in my pants down several times. But there was times in which I'd blow the fake up right in his face. So, you know, it's one of those things in which it's a cat and mouse type thing. And you know, faking the market used to be a lot more of a thing. And it still is to some extent. But there's so many ways, you know, to try to combat guys like me. But it's not easy. And we're very, very, you know, Luke is just, you know, He's taking this thing to such a different level when it comes to, you know, looking at markets and seeing lines move. You know, I taught him what I saw, and then he would see so many different things. That's the beautiful thing about this. What we do is not just, you know, it's not just algorithmic where you could just, you know, A, B, C. He, you know, it's an art form, and you know what to do, when to do it, the time you have to wait between doing it to be able to just influence the world's, you know, the U.S. world sports betting market. So for U.S. sports, you know, we can move lines and for very cheap, and we can do things. We can make guys second guess, and it's just an art form. And when you get to when you master that art, it's a beautiful thing to watch. Like it's really, you know, it's and it's fun. It's a fun thing.
You meet a lot of people. Do you enjoy those meetings, or are they just to get good relationships with new people, new bookmakers, and foreign countries?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love meeting people. I'm a people person. You know, being from Jersey, that's just how it is. So I love meeting people, and I've wined and dined with billionaires, and I've, you know, sat down with guys that didn't have $10 in their pocket. So it doesn't matter what the class level, people are people, and I can relate. You know, I grew up in Jersey City, Section 8 housing. So I grew up in a poor family, and you just found a way to get by. So, you know, it's I never look down. I always look straight. You know what I mean? You don't look up or down on anybody. You just take the person for who they are and see if there's a synergy that can get created, try to build a relationship. And, you know, I love dealing with people, especially in this business. I love talking about the business, discussing strategies, you know, and different methodologies and stuff. It's a great thing. It's my life's, you know, my life's labor. And then I love it just like you love it. Thank you. Know, this is what we do. And I never, you know, but nobody, I never knew it was going to happen this way. I never knew I was going to fall into, you know, being a professional sports bettor. Just never thought of it until it happened. And, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, even though probably if I stayed on Wall Street, I would have made probably a ton of more money. But it's not about the money. It's about what you love to do and, you know, and how you meet people. And, you know, there's a lot of characters in this business. There's, you know, you can have the wise guy, tough guy, you know, and you can have, you know, the timid guy, and you can have the guy that knows it all, and you can have the guy that is, you know, super sharp but doesn't know he's that sharp, and the guy that is super square but he thinks he's the sharpest guy. And there's a whole gamut of different personalities, and that's the beautiful thing of it, you know. And I kind of like put all these guys in different buckets and just kind of know, you know, who's street savvy, who isn't, who knows what they're talking about, who thinks they know what they're talking about, and who's the bullshitter, who's faking it more than making it. There's just so many different levels of personalities. And, you know, I've, you know, growing up in Jersey City, you kind of just see all that, you know what I mean? Just seeing that outside of this business, where you just see everything. You know, Jersey City is the most diverse city in the United States. More so than Queens, more so than Houston. There's so many, you know, it's the most diverse city. So you've seen all different races, nationalities, and different classes. And seeing that was, I think it just gave me such an interacting with all different types of people, I think really helped groom me for being, for having that knack of being able to just, you know, wheel and deal and build relationships.
What percent of you is math smart and what percent of you is street smart?
I'm not really that math smart. My street smarts, I wouldn't trade for anything in the world. And, you know, I'm not, you know, sure, I know the basic fundamentals and I love the math. I think the, when it comes to non-street smart, I think my biggest edge is my technology, my coding smarts, my ability to sit down and you know, really write some very strong code in a short period of time. I think, you know, when you code, when you're a computer programmer, it takes a while to get to a certain level and to kind of build these algorithms to try to essentially teach the computer what you want it to do, you know, in seconds, milliseconds. And I think that's kind of where my biggest edge is. It's always been a passion of mine. It's always been like my favorite computer classes was the coding classes, coding projects. I loved it. And I think that's where, that's where I shine the most. I think that's my biggest edge. I always say I'm a computer scientist. I'm a computer scientist posing as a professional sports bettor. I really think that the technology is our big edge.
Is there a number two guy in the business who's your somewhat competition, or you don't even know of the people doing the same thing as you are?
Yeah, there's a couple of guys out there. Man, when you say number two, that means, you know, you're calling me number one, which I think you're insinuating that, which I appreciate, but I don't think, you know what I mean? We never want to say we're number one. It's just not my thing. We believe we're solid. We believe we're up there. But if you're, you know, I never tell my guys we're number one. I don't like that, because if you're number one, there's only one way to go. So, you know, we want to always try to be the best we can be. You know, it's just, most of the top guys in the business, we know them and we deal with them or we deal with each other. So that's the beauty of it. It's once you get to that level, you kind of know who the guys are, and we'll cross with each other. We'll wheel and deal. We'll do what we have to do, trade pieces if we have to. You know, let's just say one guy caught a -4 when the line is 6 and I didn't have as much, but I have a -5 on a game that went to 7 and he doesn't have as much of that. Hey, I'll give you some of my -5. You give me some of your -4. So we're both happy. You know what I mean? We might trade something like that. And that's always nice. You know what I mean? Just to have, you know, to be able to, you know, diversify your equity and stuff. I think it's good to be able to be in communication with different professionals out there. I never like to work in isolation. I always like to remain in communication with all the big top guys in the business. And I think that, you know, everybody that deals with us would, you know, most of the guys are not public figures or whatnot, but, you know, we hold, once people get to deal with us and know that we're solid, we have a pretty good reputation among those top guys and top bookmakers that, you know, we're a valuable pleasure to deal with, and a good relationship is built on that.
Do you not deal with people who are assholes, even if they can help you, or do you suck it up and deal with them?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's another great question. You know, I have more of a tolerance to deal with the devil than let's say somebody like Chinese Mike. Chinese Mike is very, very strict on who he's going to deal with. And I'm more of a, you know, I try to look for the good in somebody. And if there's even a little bit of good, I might fall for the bait. And we've obviously in this business, you know, we've all been stiffed and we've been duped and stuff, but Mike kind of puts me in line and, you know, he always, you know, we're at a point right now in which we could pick and choose who we want to deal with. So we hate dealing with guys. If they're questionable, it could be a great earn, but if they're assholes, if they're not a pleasure to deal with, then we just take a pass because, you know, it's not, you know, and there's a lot of guys out there like that, guys that are just, they have great out, they might have a great thing going, but they're just such a pain in the ass and they're so hard to deal with. They're just not enjoyable, just not a fun conversation to have. And we just, at this point, we just take a pass. But have we always done that? No. You know, I mean, sometimes you have to bite the bullet and just, you know, just put a smile on and just keep chugging along. And Mike now is very, you know, Mike doesn't tolerate shit, you know what I mean? Because he's the one who's talking to most of these guys. I only come in if there's somebody that wants to speak to me or if there's a really bigger guy. So Mike is dealing with it, and Mike has you know, he doesn't give anybody a leash. Like, if he senses any type of funniness or any type of, you know, because in Mike's world, and to his credit, you know, it's black and white. You know what I mean? It's very simple. You know, you pay on Monday or you don't pay on Monday. And then are you going to pay that week or you're not going to pay that week? And then that's it. Like, you know what I mean? There's no excuses. There's no anything, because that's how he operates. That's, you know what I mean? We make sure that we're paying everybody on Monday. And if it's not on Monday, the arrangement is made on Monday for that week. And then everything else is second class. Like, that's how Mike looks at it. If you can't pay on Monday, if you have to wait to collect before you pay, you're just not on the level that we want to deal with. We're, you know, and you know, it's just, that's just how it is. And you know, I was like that at one point, but I've kind of become more understanding. Yeah, the guy, you know, just give him a little bit of a break. Mike ain't, you know, Mike is very, very, and you know, when it comes to when we clash like that, you kind of got to take the more conservative approach. So I always just let Mike just handle everything, and he just, you know, he does such a great job.
Do you check your figures every day? Do you follow any scores anymore?
I'll check once a day. I'm you know, it's rare I'm sweating a game. I'll check daily. And sometimes if I'm traveling, I won't check, you know what I mean? But I, you know, it's you know, you believe in it, you know what I mean? And you got to believe in the math, and that the math will all work out. There's a lot of big swings, but at the same time, you know, it's, you just, we've been doing it for so long that, you know, and I know it sounds, I don't want to sound cocky or like that, but it's not whether for us, it's not about whether we're going to win or lose. Ultimately, it's about how much we're going to win. So, and that's just, you know, and to make sure that the figures are collectible, that's the stuff that, you know, we're looking at, that makes sure we're not going to get laid down on and whatnot. That's it. I you know, and I know that's like, oh man, how could you, you know, people might think that that's such a bad thing, but that's the truth. Like, you know what I mean? We, the formula's there. We know, I always say that winning is when you get to a certain level, winning becomes secondary. When you know how to win, you know how to win. It's getting out. It's finding out. It's making sure you get paid. These are the big things. It's lasting long. It's just making sure that you're able to keep betting at that thing. Just like any advanced player out there, you know, once you know how to count cards, once you know how to hold card, once you know how to slot hustle, once you know how to do this, that, it's there. You know how to win. You just got to find the game, and you want to stay at that game as long as possible before you get the heat and get chased. That's always going to be the constant struggle. So we're always looking for that. That's the daily struggle, not whether we're going to win or not, but how long we're going to last in a certain out.
Okay, let's change. Let's go into another gear and talk about you growing up. What was your household like in Jersey City?
It was good. I lived in an apartment building on Newark Avenue in General Square area. I was just always, you know, I just always go outside, and we'd play with friends all the time. And, you know, we'd play in the hallways because our houses weren't that big. So we'd have a hallway. It was a nice carpeted hallway. So we'd wrestle in the hallway all the time. We'd play board games in the hallway. We'd play manhunt around the whole building. There was like two staircases, one on each end of the hallway. And it was 17 floors in a building. So we would just run around, basketball, baseball, handball. It was a really good childhood, and, you know, played video games also. And, you know, a lot of the video games, I think, is such a slept on thing. And my son, he was playing a lot of video games, and, you know, my wife would say, man, I think he's playing too much. And I'm like, no, he's playing like these role playing games where you have to think and you actually interact with, like, you know, the AI and kind of, you know, make decisions. And I told her this really helped me And I know it sounds kind of corny, but it really is, like, you know, playing Zelda and all these other, you know, games like that kind of taught you how to critically think and how to solve problems and how to, you know, you have to go and talk to this villager and go get this weapon and do all this. It's not just a shoot 'em, you know, game that ends in 5 minutes or 10 minutes. No, it has a lot, you know, these RPGs, these role-playing games, video games are just so, I think it teaches you how to think on a different level. And it kind of builds those critical thinking skills. So I was all for it, and I know it helped me out. So I did a lot of that. It was a good childhood, you know. I really I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
You have a love of board games, and you actually compete. And I believe you're still a champion in one of the games. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So board gaming is, you know. It's a hobby I've loved for my, you know, since I, you know, played Monopoly and Clue and Trivial Pursuit and all these games growing up as a kid. But then you started looking at these Euro games and these war games and you kind of realize, you know, the strategy involved. It's like one of those things in which life is like a constant struggle where you're managing resources, you're doing everything to try to make sure that you're trying to get the best deals, you know, buy low, sell high, you know, and try to buy things for as cheap as possible and stuff like that. There's always these and in board games, you could kind of like put in a kind of life scenario in an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, where you're managing resources, where you're kind of figuring out what your opponent is doing or what your, you know, the guy that you're dealing with is doing, just like life. It's like a small simulation of a life journey, of a life struggle. And it's something to me that really, really kept my brain sharp. So I would compete in these tournaments and stuff. And, you know, the convention I would go to got canceled, but it's a great hobby. It's anybody that, you know what I mean? You know, in this day and age when kids are always on their phones and on their tablets, on their computers, and there's no human interaction, it's just not, you know, board games, when we play, we're talking to each other, we're having a good time, you know what I mean? It's not like chess where nobody talks, everybody's just serious and stuff. Now, you know, where it's a very social thing, and I love it, you know what I mean? It's a great thing. And yeah, I've won a couple of first prizes and a couple of things, but it's not even about, you know, it's just personal goals that I set. I just love, and my, you know, my oldest son, he comes with me and he loves it too. You know, we love to just play, and it's like a kind of like a little mini family. It's like a week. We go every week. The name of the convention is the World Board Gaming Championships. It's out of Pennsylvania. And, it's a convention held every year, and it's really cool. It's a good time. And, it's fun to be had. There's like 120 different tournaments going on, and you kind of want to fill out your schedule to make sure you're able to compete in this tournament and that tournament, make sure they don't conflict and stuff. So it's pretty fun building your schedule, knowing what you're going to do every hour of every day. And it's just nonstop gaming. And it's something that I love. It's a great hobby. I did it when I was a kid, and I continue to do it to this day. So.
Do any of the other kids enjoy board gaming or AI learning video games?
I'm sorry, repeat that question.
Do any of the other children in your family besides your oldest enjoy the love for board games that you have?
Nah, some of them, we have family game nights and stuff like that, and they like it, you know what I mean? But never as serious. I have two sons, two daughters. It's boy, girl, girl, boy. So, you know, the two girls now are just wanting to shop and go to the mall and try this outfit and that outfit. And my youngest son, he's still only 9. So he just doesn't really, he just wants to just chill out and play with his trucks and do his thing. So it's nobody's really, we're not, you know, it's just my oldest son kind of that got into it, and that's it. But nobody else, you know, my two boys, they play video games. But my two girls don't touch video games. They might play like little games on their phones or something, but not like that.
You're the smartest kid in your public school?
I went to private school my whole life, except college. No, I wasn't the smartest at all. Never. I was never the smartest. There was guys in which, you know, I would struggle to try to get that A, and there were guys that would study for 10 minutes and get an A. So it was always an uphill battle for me, and but I knew that, you know, and I remember my mom telling me, "You see, if you work hard, everything's gonna work out." And that's the one thing I always kept with me, is that I'll never be the smartest guy. You know what I mean? You kind of, you know, don't get me wrong, I don't think I'm you know, below average intelligence. I think I am, you know, average or maybe slightly above average intelligence, but I know that the one thing I can't control, that's what's given to you. The one thing I can control is my work ethic. And I truly believe that, you know, my work ethic is unparalleled, where I'll work it so hard to just get to that level. And cause that's the one thing I can control. And I'm going to just keep working until I see success. So that's always my, that's another edge that I think I always had. And it's the once I put myself in that mind frame, where I'm just going to succeed and I'm going to try my hardest and until I get it done. That's always been something that I excelled at.
Tell us about your wife who promised to adopt me.
Yeah, so my wife is, you know, I've known my wife. I was friends with my wife's brother at the time, and I used to go to his house, play basketball, and, you know, she was in his backyard, and she was looking outside the window and stuff, and, you know, we kind of got talking to each other, and we've been dating since high school, and, you know, I've known her since the fifth grade, started dating in high school, went to the prom together, and, you know, it was just something that, you know, I kind of was lucky to find the one really early, and, you know, got married at a young age, and, you know, right 2 years out of college, so I was about 24 when we got married, and she's a few months younger than me, so, you know, we were in the same grades and stuff, and, she's great. You know, as good of a wife as she is, she's an unbelievable mom. And, you know, she just, you know what I mean? She's the kind of mom that just, she, you know, I have four kids, and my four kids might want to eat four different things. And, you know, she, you know, most moms would cook one meal, you know, she's crazy. She'll cook four separate meals for all four kids. And I tell her, you're going to go nuts. You're going to drive yourself crazy doing this. But that's just who she is. She just wants to make everybody happy, you know, she's heart of gold. I really, like, you know, I hit a jackpot finding my wife. So
I remember when I first walked into your house and I saw Amy, I thought, oh, he has like an au pair here from a college girl.
Yeah. Yeah, it's when it's, you know, the Fountain of Youth, bless her. She, even with my two daughters, it's like, you know, her aunt always says, hey, can you send me a picture of the three sisters? Because it's like she's one of the two daughters. Yeah, a lot of people, you know, she got lucky she still stayed young looking. Where, you know, I wish that didn't happen with me, unfortunately. So
it looks like she's in her late 20s. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Without her, could you have done what you do in the gambling world?
No. She's really, like, you know, she's unbelievable. She's a rock. You know what I mean? It's I've been through a lot of stuff, man. We just celebrated 19 years married. And she's really been there for me every step of the way and supported me. And no, I don't think I wouldn't have been successful without having someone. And she still barely understands what I do. You know what I mean? She doesn't really, you know, she knows I'm a professional gambler, and that's about it. She doesn't really, never understands what, exactly how we do it. Never wanted to know about it. And that's good. You know what I mean? She doesn't understand the swings involved. Hey, you know what I mean? When I tell her numbers, like, you know, I she just doesn't understand it. She can't believe it sometimes, you know, win or lose. Oh, we lost this. What? Oh my God. Am I going to have to go back to work? I'm like, no, don't worry. Everything's fine. And then if we win this, oh my God, take the money out. You know what I mean? She doesn't understand how it works. So, you know, it's kind of funny. Like, I think that, you know, until you've been doing this for so long, the swings and stuff, you can't really teach someone about these swings. They just accept it as is, or they just don't ask. And she's kind of in a position in which she just doesn't ask, as long as, you know, there's money in the bank and there's money in her hand to be able to just support the, you know, support us and buy whatever she needs for the kids or buy whatever. That's all she really, you know, that's all she wants to know about. She just doesn't really want to be involved emotionally in any of the swings, which is good because I don't, you know, it's all, you know, I think it would be put some stress on her.
I know you're close to your mom. Does she have any idea about your swings and what you do?
Oh no, my mom, if I told my mom the swings, she would have a heart attack. She would never, ever understand that. And she still doesn't, you know what I mean? My mom is God bless her. She's 89. So she's, it's funny you say my mom, cause you met my mom when I took her to WrestleMania 30, my mom just, I know, you know, just to get into some quick wrestling thing. My mom took me to WrestleMania 1. And it was just, you know, it's a pretty momentous event. Anybody that, even if you're not a wrestling fan, to be at the first ever WrestleMania was a pretty awesome thing. And I said to myself, when WrestleMania 30 came on, I'm like, Mom, let me, you know, repay you the favor. Where she, it's not really like she doesn't even watch wrestling, you know what I mean? I just said, Mom, let me take you on a trip to New Orleans. We'll do some cool stuff. And by the way, it's the 30th anniversary of WrestleMania. So, you know, I my mom's been there. She's, you know, she's one of the greatest. And she, but she doesn't really get it when it comes to what I'm doing. You know, she still tells people, you know, he works with computers, because she doesn't want the heat or the questions of, you know, my son's a gambler. Nobody, you know, she's old school. She's not going to, you know, go into that conversation.
I was an accountant for 40 years with my mom.
Exactly.
I was an accountant. I love it. In real life, I was an accountant for 6 months, but that's what she told people.
That's great. Yeah. Exactly.
Let's talk about wrestling. Please stay with us. There's some funny stories coming up. Well, when did you first discover wrestling?
So, you know, I was watching Saturday mornings, and then, it was sometime right after Hulk Hogan won the title against the Sheik in 84, and I was a big Hulkamaniac, and I just couldn't believe it. I thought it was, just such a beautiful thing, and it's, I always loved baseball, I loved sports, but I loved wrestling. That time it was kayfabe, so I didn't know anything was pre-planned or scripted or anything, and I thought, my God, this is just so cool, and it's just an art that I've loved that I've never shaken off. It's such a great, great thing, and I'm still a fan. Not as much as of today's wrestling, you know what I mean? I'm an 80s kid, so, you know, I love, you know, the golden era, as they call it, but I love like 70s and even 60s wrestling, you know. When you told me, when we first met, I think, you know, our friend Tugboat introduced us, and I remember, you know, I thought we were going to have a gambling conversation that whole day. But I remember when you told me that you were at the, when Koloff beat Bruno for the title in 71, I couldn't believe you were at that event. And all we talked about was wrestling that night. And we had no gambling talk at all. So I think that's what kind of got us a lot more closer, because, you know, it's rare that there's two professional gamblers that also are big wrestling fans in this business. Although I've noticed a lot of guys that love to do this still like wrestling. So it's kind of funny. But yeah, it's something that I thought was amazing that you were at that event. And, you know, it's, you know, I was a big, you know, I love Bruno, and I always admired Bruno Sammartino from a distance. Although I didn't get to see him wrestle in his prime, I did get to see him wrestle a little bit in some garden shows and stuff. So as a kid,
how old were you in 84 when Hulk won the title?
I was 6.
Oh, that's pretty young. So, as you progressed, did you suspect that this might not be on the up and up, that it might be predetermined?
You would hear family members that would come over and say, oh, no, that's all ketchup. And, you know what I mean, when they'd bleed, and, you know, I'm like, ketchup, that's not ketchup. And, you know, it just, you know, you just hear all these things, and he just squeezed the pill. That's why the blood is there. And you never, none of us, you know, I always believed. And until this day, I believe, the pain is real. You know, not many people know, but I trained to be a pro wrestler for 6 months under Iron Mike Sharp when I was a junior or senior in high school. So I went to his wrestling school in Asbury Park, and I trained there, and I quit because I was my the pain was just too excruciating. I just couldn't do it. So I admire completely, you know, admire the athleticism involved. And you know, these guys are, you know, every other athlete has an off season. These guys don't have an off season. And back then, there was no such thing as taking time off for an injury or anything. These guys would wrestle injured. And, you know, it's just, you know, the people that can, you know, I think wrestlers are some of the best athletes in the world for what they do and how much they put their body through. And although you have scripted spots and scripted endings, the pain is 100% real. Every wrestler has had multiple surgeries of some sorts and all these injuries. You know, it's very, very difficult to do. And I stuck it out as hard as I could until, you know, I being a 17-year-old and having trouble walking. And till this day, I experience back pains from those 6 months. And I'm like, my God, I don't know how these guys can do it for so long. So the admiration has always been there. And I even, you know, when people say, oh, that's fake and stuff, you know, I get offended because even though I'm not a wrestler, just it's not, you know, it's the results might be fake, but the athletics and all the training involved is as real as it gets.
People can suspend their disbelief for Die Hard and Star Wars, but they have a problem with wrestling because it's live, I think, and that should make it more entertaining. For me, you can, when I was on the set for Lay the Favorite, they shot the scenes 40 times. You have one shot in wrestling. I think it's a much more, you know, even though the results are predetermined, it's much more enjoyable than being on a set of a movie, which was just awful for me. It was very, very boring and very, very disappointing. When you first realized it never changed for you. You never went through that period that I did, like, oh, this isn't real. I can't care about Killer Kowalski anymore. I know it's predetermined.
Well, it took me a while to know that it was, you know, I was like one of the, you know, I just suspended. And until this day, like, I suspended disbelief because whenever I'm watching a wrestling match, I need to be involved in the storyline, and I suspend the disbelief, and I want to believe that it's real because I enjoy it more. So I like, you know, I know you're more of like the work ethic in the ring. I'm a big storyline. Like, you know, when Greg Valentine broke Tito's leg, and, you know, let me tell you, man, I was really like shocked and I was really upset. Like, it really affected me as a kid. I was really sad for Tito Santana, who I loved as a kid, loved, one of my favorites. And it was just so like, oh my God, how could he do that? And so it was so emotional. It just tapped into emotions that, you know, if you're watching, like you said, if you watch a movie, you know, these guys will relive the same Star Wars scenes over and over again. Guys love that stuff. And you know, having the separate scenes, it's like iconic scenes in movie, in film, for wrestling, these iconic scenes, you know, when Orndorff betrayed Hulk Hogan and pile drive them, and, you know, and you just see, I remember these things growing up and these unbelievable events that made my jaw drop and tapped into an emotion of mine that never really got tapped into, that no, you know, that a sporting event rarely can get tapped, you know, they can tap into. You know, there's definitely sports moments out there, you know, but it's with wrestling, you're kind of, you know, you're, I don't want to say guaranteed, but you're more likely to have these moments because they're scripted, obviously, where sports, you know, it could take a long, long time to have that, you know, wow moment. So it just, for me, it's just guaranteed entertainment, and I've always loved it. And it never changed for me when I knew that it was scripted at all.
So what was your take on PWG, that like when we went there and there are no storylines, it's all work ethic matches?
Yeah, you know, it's nice. PWG was great. You know, I wish there were some storylines a little bit. You know, they might have done some interviews before the matches or something, maybe some in-ring interviews just to have a little bit of a history. Because I think that to me is like, you know, I love the storylines involved. And, you know, you kind of, you know, you want to believe that this guy really hates the other guy. Just to me, it just adds to it. This is the era I grew up in. And, And it's just that to me is just a fundamental part of wrestling, to just, you know, suspend all disbeliefs and just go all in and buy it. PWG is just, you know, and there's a different thing. Like, you know, I'm of the sorts of, you know, where a long time ago, when you would have a high spot where somebody would just get, you know, when, you know, you pile drive somebody off the top rope or whatever, that's it. It's over. You know what I mean? There's no getting up from that. Where I think in this era in the PWG, which is unbelievable moves, but when you have spot after spot after spot after spot, and guys are just getting up from it, it's more so showcasing how many moves you can do versus telling a story in the ring. And to me, telling a story in the ring is where the art comes out.
There are some storylines there too, but you know, you weren't coming. It's a long trip from Jersey to LA to come monthly. So
exactly. So yeah, I understand that part.
Can you tell us about your oldest daughter's love of wrestling and how it led to a physical confrontation with a wrestler?
Yeah, you were at that event. So yeah, my daughter, she's unlike my son, who's very reserved, and my oldest son, he'll just sit there and just watch the match. Rarely, you know, he might clap or cheer a little bit. He's like the Japanese fans, doesn't really do much. My daughter, if she sees somebody cheating or somebody doing something wrong, man, she will rip their head off, start screaming, start going nuts. And this is since we took her to our first match in Dallas at that first indie show when she was 8 years old. So, or not in Dallas, in San Francisco at WrestleMania 31 during that weekend. So, yeah, she doesn't, you know, take shit. She has a loud voice, and you know, there was a time in which, you know, one of the wrestlers, I don't want to really name names, you know what I mean, but one of the wrestlers kind of like
Mercedes Martinez. Her.
Okay.
I don't mind naming names.
Okay. So one of the wrestlers tapped her on the head, and my daughter just slapped her across the face, and then, you know, the wrestler pushed my daughter, who was at the time, you know, 10 years old, which is like insane. You know what I mean? You're not supposed to hit a fan. And the fan, I told my daughter, I'm like, never lay a hand on a wrestler unless you give them a high five or something. But if they lay their hand on you, then by all means. I just taught her that in life. You know what I mean? You know, you treat people with respect, but once they violate your space, do what you got to do. So she pet her like a dog. And, you know, my daughter thought that was, you know, very disrespectful. So she just slapped her right across the face. And then the wrestler got really upset and pushed my daughter, which I thought was a little bit, you know, was wrong of her. But anyway, you know, these are stories that we've had good times in, and, you know, my daughter, unfortunately, doesn't watch as much wrestling as she used to, but, maybe one day, she'll get back into it.
That was one of the best things I ever saw, by the way. That and her interaction with Tessa Blanchard when Tessa called her that t-shirt makes you look fat, and she answered her very quickly, what about your partner? And the partner, who's a big girl, not really a fat girl, but a big girl, turned to your daughter and said, how did I get involved in this? You know, she was like not part of the conversation. Tessa was a heel, and being a heel, I mean, she would never violate space or anything. She just kind of picked on your daughter, and you know, she answered back for herself, and it was a very funny scene. Your daughter provided a lot of moments in wrestling for me that I won't forget.
Yeah, one of the biggest moments for me with my daughter was at the last PWG show in Reseda ever. Did they tear down that Legion Hall already or no?
Yeah, it's demolished. Down. It's demolished now, yeah. Kevin Steen put up a video of going back to it while it was being demolished. You know, people love that. Wow. I mean, the wrestlers really love that place. It was a special place for them.
Oh, yeah. 100%. So the last show there, Keith Lee wind up giving his jacket. One of the audience members, won Keith Lee's jacket, and then he wound up giving it back to Keith Lee to gift to my daughter. So my daughter was kind of involved in, like, Keith, you know, the last PWG show in Reseda, and we still to this day have Keith Lee's jacket in her closet, which is pretty cool. You know what I mean? That he was nice enough to give us that. So it was cool. You know, PWG, the many times I went there, I have always had a great time. And, you know, it was just, I got to get back to the shows. I know they're in downtown LA now, so I definitely want to, you know, once they start up again, would love to go see a show with you.
Hold on, I'm having mic troubles. Hang on one sec.
Yeah, no problem, buddy.
Yeah, so Keith Lee is engaged to Mia Yim, who lives with my friend Shayna, who used to come to shows with us. And is now, well, she was until last week, a WWE Tag Team Champion. She lost that to Natalya and Tamina. But Shayna's done really well for herself. And I met her at PWG, and we became friends through PWG. And that was a special place. I mean, probably 20% of my closest friends came out of that audience.
Yeah, it was really, really wild, ruckus crowd, and it was a great atmosphere, and there's no bad seat in the house, you know, and
yeah, you have that, there's only four rows. Yeah, it was cool.
Except the standing room only, I guess.
Yeah, you know. They let people in that. There was no fire marshals looking at PWG, which is good, because they were way over the limit. We always thought if there's a fire, we're just dead. But we accepted that because we love this show.
One of the cool things about PWG is the tickets would go on sale. They'd sell out in, you know, 30 seconds. And I remember you saying, listen, because for my kids to come, we'd have to get front row seats because my kids were short. We didn't want to sit in the second, third row. So we wanted to get the best seats so they could see everything. And you know, I had me and my crew, because it would go on sale at 11 p.m. Eastern. I told my crew, stick around, you know, and we got to, just like we're trying to bet something fast, we need to nab these tickets fast. And we were able to nab tickets. We never resold them, obviously, never did any of that, but we used them all for our friends to be able to get these best seats and kind of used some of the skills that we had in betting, catching a sports line fast to nab these tickets pretty fast. So I thought that was a cool crossover to be able to utilize a skill for something of a hobby.
I gave one of those tickets you got me to Ronda Rousey for her first show there, and another one to James Franco for his first show there. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's an actor, but he's pretty important in the business. So he's actually a bigger name than Ronda, but that was the only person who the whole audience like freaked that he was at a show. He came at intermission, so he kind of, you know, snuck in there as we were going back in. And I didn't even know who he was when my friend Chris Bauer said, I need a ticket for somebody. I said, okay. And he was very cryptic about it. So I asked him, why are you being cryptic? And he said, well, he's kind of popular. And I asked him who he was. And he said, James Franco. And I was thinking, that's not John Franco, is the baseball player. This is somebody else. I had no idea who he was. He's a big actor, big producer, and a big director of movies too now. Just a huge name. I'm not a movie guy, and I don't think you're a movie guy either, so you probably don't know that name as well as I didn't. Is that the case? Do you know who he is?
I don't.
Yeah, that's okay. I wrote down, ask Spanky if he knows who Connor McDavid is. Do you know who that is?
No.
He's the best hockey player in the NHL.
Best who?
Hockey player in the NHL.
Oh, okay.
Do you know who Conor McGregor is? I'll bet you do.
Yeah, I do. I know who that is. Yes, that's okay. The fighter. Yep.
My internet connection is unstable. Do I care about that? Well, we care about that. Do you want to wrap this up? Or you have any other stories you want to tell?
No, you know, whatever questions you have, I think you know, what I would like to say is that I really admire you. Thank you for the longevity that you've had in this business. And I think anybody listening to this is obviously a big fan of yours. But if they're not, or if they don't, you know, recognize what you've done for this business and how long you've lasted, not being, you know, a big technological guy, but being a pencil and paper handicapper, and to be as successful as long as you have doing this, is such a testament to your what you've done for this business and the mark you've left on it, and how much I admire you. And you're a great friend of mine, and you're an unbelievable asset to the sports betting business. So I just want to thank you for everything that you've done, and for all that you've paved kind of the way for guys like me to succeed, and you know, to teach me. You know, you've always been there for me, and when I had to ask questions, or when I was going through my case and stuff, or you've been through a lot of stuff. So it really means a lot.
So unfortunately, we lost connection with Spanky. However, rest assured, his check is in the mail.